Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view, the people who work in the prison system would have another, and I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4 p.m. on your community radio 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
Hello and welcome to the Doin' Time Show. This is 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on the dial, streaming live on www.3cr.org.au. And a warning that this episode of Doin' Time contains audio images of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have died and graphic discussion of deaths in custody and racial profiling. This is Marissa and I will be with you for the next hour. Today on the show, our first interview will be Dr. Vicky Sentis, Associate Professor, Faculty of Law and Justice, New South Wales, Sydney. I invited Vicky onto the show to alert listeners to a landmark class action highlighting the horrors of strip searches and to hear an overview of what has happened to date. Following a class action led by leading law firm Slater & Gordon and Redfern Legal Centre, a judgment was handed down in the Supreme Court of New South Wales, which awarded significant damages to the lead plaintiff, Rhea Meredith, for an unlawful strip search undertaken by New South Wales Police at the Splendour in the Grass Festival in 2018. After that, Kath Strong from Defend Dissent Coalition, who also did some brilliant emceeing at last Tuesday's rally at Parliament House, which had a number of speakers discussing new police powers. Kath will join us to give a report back and to talk about the Justice Legislation Amendment Bill, focusing on draconian anti-process laws put forward by the Allan government, who has been proposing these alarming laws, hindering the right to protest. Finally, we will hear from Dr. Tamar Hopkins, expert on racial profiling data and founder of the Centre Against Racial Profiling. She will discuss findings based on an analysis of Victoria Police's 2024 own data, revealing that Aboriginal people are now 15 times more likely to be searched and 10 times more likely to have force used against them than white people. Racialised communities are subjected to over-policing that frequently escalates into police violence. And we will be now going into an announcement and we'll be speaking with Dr. Vicky Sentis very soon, but I will be doing an intro leading up to that.
You're listening to 3CR, an apartheid-free zone. 3CR's Committee of Management has passed a declaration formalising our commitment to a free Palestine. As an apartheid-free zone, we're committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression. We stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organisations to join us in this struggle. Visit our website to read the full declaration and learn more about our commitment to justice and liberation for Palestine and the Apartheid Free Zone movement.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio Doin' Time Show. Slater and Gordon and Redfern Legal Centre commenced the class action in July 2022 brought by Rhea Meredith on behalf of people who were forced to be strip searched by New South Wales police at music festivals from 2016. The class action has to date had thousands of people register with strip search claims across that period. I'm excited to welcome Dr. Vicky Centers to talk about this and the whole thing, basically. Hello, Vicky. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Marissa. It's great to be here.
Lovely to have you. Would you be able to just start off talking about this landmark case and how you actually got to, you know, to work with that?
Yeah, so the case was handed down in the Supreme Court of New South Wales for judgment on 30th of September. So that was a really important judgment because the judge affirmed that the lead plaintiff, Ray Meredith, was indeed unlawfully strip searched in particularly humiliating, traumatic and degrading circumstances. So in summary, she was directed by police to unlawfully remove her clothing, basically all of her clothing, to remove a tampon and bend over and have an officer, a female officer, inspect her genital area. And then a male officer entered the makeshift cubicle to return Ray's bag while this was all happening. So in a nutshell, the judge found the police didn't meet any of the legal criteria. They breached all of the mandatory safeguards around privacy. And importantly, the judge found this wasn't just about individual officers. I mean, not only did none of the officers involved even turn their minds to any of the legal criteria, the judge said it was a gross failure to follow the law. But more than that, the judge's analysis was that these gross failures were caused by the institution itself. So they said there was an institutional failure by New South Wales Police to properly train, supervise and monitor police in strip searches. So it's a really important judgment for accountability. Now, this is the result of a very long campaign that Redfern Legal Centre has been running for years and years to try and put a light, a spotlight on strip searches, not just at music festivals, but more broadly. But the focus has been on music festivals because there's been a massive increase in the number of strip searches due to music festivals. I got involved in this work because together with my colleague, Michael Grucott, back in 2019, we did some pro bono research commissioned by Redfern Legal Centre to look at what's actually happening in practice. So our research involved FOIs of police data and looking at case studies. And we concluded, looking at it systematically, that it was likely that the vast majority of strip searches were unlawful because the criteria, they have to be in serious and urgent circumstances in New South Wales. It can't just be for the same reason that you do a general search. And so we concluded that because the data showed that not only one, the vast majority of strip searches found nothing, for the small number of strip searches that did find something, it was overwhelmingly a small possession quantity of drugs. And we argued that that breached the law because that's not the point of the law. So that kind of framework was, you know, picked up by a number of inquiries in New South Wales, which, you know, have been putting the spotlight on unlawful police searches. And effectively that was what was found here. So nothing was found when Ray Meredith was strip searched. And also the fact that the only reason given by police to try and justify her strip search was an alleged sniff by a drug detection dog. And that was something that the judge also said. Like, so the judge not only ruled for Rhea, she made determinations around how the law should be understood. And one of the things she said was that police can never strip search anyone on the basis of a drug dog indication alone. So, yeah, that's an overview of some of the highlights of that judgment.
So what happens after the judgment? It's been handed down. What is there room for appeal?
Yeah, so unfortunately the state is appealing against the judgment. So they put in their notice of intent. We don't know what the grounds are for the appeal yet. The state have until the 30th of December to lodge their grounds. So it's surprising but unsurprising, because several days before the state lodged their notice of intent to appeal, they also made public their public response to the recommendations of the New South Wales Drug Summit, which, you know, made a range of great recommendations, you know, around harm minimisation in relation to drug use generally. And there were two recommendations in particular that the state refused, or so that they did not accept. One was that drug detection dogs stop being used at music festivals. So that was the recommendation from the drug summit. And the second recommendation that the state refused to accept was that strip searches stop being used for mere suspicion of drug possession. So that's really interesting timing. So they said, we don't accept those recommendations. And in fact, the second recommendation, the idea that police shouldn't be strip searching just because they think someone has drugs on them for personal use, that was something that the judge also found that shouldn't normally be a reason to conduct a strip search. So that's quite interesting. So whilst we don't know the reasons, the grounds, for the appeal, that fact is quite interesting. So we'll know in a few months whether, what the grounds for the appeal are. So in a sense, it puts the 3,000 plus people and also Mayor Raiders in limbo. It puts her payout in limbo. It puts the law in limbo. But it still stands as good law if and when it's overturned.
And we don't really know that. Like, there's a bit of uncertainty there now, isn't there?
Yeah, that's right. So we'll have to see what happens.
So this is a landmark case, isn't it, Vicky? The largest class action to have been brought against any police force in Australian history. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, so it's significant in that it's the largest number of people in a class action, so 3,000 and counting. So people can still actually join the class action now. And it's large also in terms of the potential payouts. So the lead plaintiff was awarded $93,000, which is, you know, pretty modest in relation to torts against the person by police. But the implications are there was a certain amount that was awarded, but the amount hasn't been settled for the lead plaintiff in relation to what's known as exemplary damages. So the court said that New South Wales Police should pay out extra money to the lead plaintiff on top of the $93,000. As a form of punishment against New South Wales Police. Now, the judge deferred on awarding what that amount would be because it would be in the millions, because it would apply to each of the class members. So, for example, the plaintiff's lawyers argued, well, that amount of exemplary damage should be $50,000. So if that amount was accepted by the judge, it would mean the 3,000 people would all be entitled to that $50,000 because it's the same set of circumstances and it relates to the institutional failures by New South Wales Police. So hypothetically, this class action could result in around $150 million being paid out to the class. So that's speculation at this stage, but it has the potential to be a very large payout. So you can see that's likely one reason why the state is appealing as well. So that's still to be decided.
Yeah, I mean, this really raises quite a few issues, particularly for the prison community, in that there's an alarming parallel, isn't there? Not only have teenagers been criminalised at music festivals, but I'm hoping that this will set a precedent, for for women in prison in particular to do a class action. You never know.
Yeah, look, that's a really important point because obviously the routine and systematic use of strip searches of imprisoned people is entrenched. It's, you know, as many advocates have said, you know, it's sexual abuse at the hands of the state. It's at a you know, more horrendous and deeper and entrenched level than the strip searching that goes, it's not comparable to the strip searching that goes on in festivals, to be honest, obviously. So it's not, unfortunately, the judgment relates to strip searches in the field, not in prison, because there's, you know, and by police, but certainly it's important politically to draw those parallels and to keep shining the light on the experience of incarcerated people and the dehumanising and degrading conduct and effect of strip searching in prisons, and that, you know, certainly I think it's a really important area for compensation and something that needs to be addressed by the state.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you touched on this, the training, education and supervision provided by New South Wales Police to officers conducting searches was inadequate, but it's also an attitudinal atmosphere, isn't it? You can have all the training in the world, but, you know, what about unconscious bias and all that type of stuff?
Yeah, 100%. And there's a lot of studies and research that show the problem isn't a lack of training. It's the nature and effect of state power. So, you know, I think that's something to take into account as well. I mean, clearly in these circumstances, there was absolutely, you know, management at the top just didn't care, is my view. Like, they just didn't care about the legal provisions at the time. But certainly it goes, as you say, there's kind of cultural issues and biases, exactly. But also this sense of what policing is, and this sense of authority and the exercise of power over people, you know, certainly can't be trained out. It's sort of essential or endemic to the institution itself.
And finally, what can we do, what can listeners do to learn more about this or to help? Do they need to jump onto the Redfern Community Legal Centre website?
Yeah, the Redfern Legal Centre website is a good place to learn about the campaign, to learn about your rights in relation to strip searches, and to learn more about the judgment, and if anyone listening has been strip searched at music festivals, there's information there on how to have a look at the criteria around what happened to you and to join the class action and get some advice around that, because it's not too late to join.
Yeah, I mean, I've interviewed Samantha before, and she's been amazing, Samantha, the supervising solicitor. But I wanted to invite you because I felt that I wanted to hear it, and you've given a really, you know, an overview of the research. But I'd love to have you back sometime just to talk further about this. We've been able to invite Dr. Tamar Hopkins on as well to look at some new thing, a current affair that's happened today. So I'm sorry that I can't speak to you longer today.
Oh, it's a pleasure, and happy to come back on the show.
Awesome. I mean, you did brilliantly anyway, Vicky. Thanks so much. Listeners now understand more about criminalisation of you know, and what's happening and the horrors of strip searching.
Great. Thanks, Marissa.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
But I won't be sworn at and I won't be bossed around. That includes them, the big bosses. They won't be bossing me around either. I will find a way.
Rents are through the roof. The cost of living is skyrocketing and public housing is under attack. How do we fight back? Join us on Wednesday, the 26th of November from 6 p.m. at RMIT University's City Campus for From Housing Crisis to Dwelling Justice, a free public event that gets to the heart of the housing struggle. Featuring the premiere of Bay Views for All, a documentary about the fight to save the Barrack Beacon public housing estate, and a panel discussion with public housing residents, activists, and experts, this is one you won't want to miss. Register for a free ticket at events.humanitix.com/crisis-2-justice.
It's never occurred to them they've actually got something valuable here.
Hands off public housing. A 3CR supporter.
And this is the Doin' Time Show. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio. And it's approximately 4:21. And I'm running a little bit late, but we're going to be speaking now with Kath Strong. The Doin' Time Show provides a safe environment for marginalised communities who are deprived of a voice and where there is a violation of human rights. I'm pleased to welcome Kath Strong from the Defend Dissent Coalition to the program to talk about a recent rally last Tuesday on the steps of Parliament, where there were speakers highlighting the Allan government's draconian and brutal new laws in regards to anti-protest proposed legislation. Hello, Kath, welcome.
Thanks very much for having me.
It's lovely to have you. Now, Kath, I'm wondering, there was a rally last Tuesday, and I believe that there are a number of speakers. Was this in regards to the anti-protest proposed legislation?
Yes, that's right. So the government last Wednesday had a debate in the lower house about the Justice Legislation Amendment Bill, which has sections in it that are about protests, about allowing police to demand that people take off masks, about criminalising lock-on devices and restricting where people can protest. So we were there to say that all of these things are unnecessary and we don't want to see them passed.
Indeed. And how do you think that impacts on people of colour and First Nations people?
I saw that I've gone blank on the name of the group that keeps track of how people of colour and First Nations people
yep.
are policed in Victoria have just released something today that shows that we are still looking at like huge rates of over-policing of those groups, more violence against those groups from police, worse sentences for those people. And we know that every time the police are given more powers, that those powers will be used more against First Nations people and people of colour than they will against other people. So every time these sorts of laws are introduced, they are essentially racist laws that make it more likely that harm will happen to those groups.
I will be interviewing Dr. Tamar Hopkins after you, actually, so this is all interconnected today. So tell us about the speakers and, you know, and maybe if you could give us a little bit of background to the coalition.
Yes, certainly. The Centre for Racial Profiling is the group that did that report that I was just talking about. Please
sure.
look at their work. It's great. The speakers that we had Yaron Bundle Cousins, who came from Camp Sovereignty to speak about First Nations issues. We had Natalie, who is a trans woman, speaking about how the trans community is often over-policed as well. They suffer from police violence regularly. We had representatives from Free Palestine Melbourne and from other groups that are impacted, Rising Tides. So representing the environmental movement, who in particular will be impacted by this new criminalisation of lock-on devices, because that's often a tactic used in environmental movements to stop things happening, like trees being knocked down or mines being built. So there are so many different groups who are being impacted or have the potential to be impacted by these new laws. And the Defend Dissent Coalition is about like trying to bring together as many of these groups as possible so we can put forward a united front and just like show how many people could be hurt, could be shut down, could not have their voices heard if more laws like this keep getting passed.
Okay, so let's look at a day when there's going to be a rally, and like, should these police powers come through, what would happen?
I think the first thing that would happen is that there would be many people who would think twice about whether or not they should go to the rally. So people who need to wear masks for various reasons, whether it is because they are immunocompromised, they may be ill with something that means that if they catch a cold even, that they may get much worse. They may be caring for people who they don't want to bring germs home to. All of those people will be thinking, should I go? Because the police can tell me to take my mask off. People who are from certain religious backgrounds who may require facial covering. People who need to conceal their identity, such as perhaps domestic violence victims. They will be thinking twice. And the laws say, oh, there are reasons why you can still wear your mask, but we know that the police don't stop and ask people carefully and listen to people when people tell them what their reasons for having a mask are. We've already seen that happening in designated zones. They just don't care. So people who are wearing masks or need to wear masks may not come. First Nations people, people of colour may not come because they're worried about increased policing and about the effect that will have on them. And there's all sorts of other people who just may be concerned about the fact that there will be more police and more police powers, and that just makes them scared. So straight off the bat, we're seeing democracy and people's voices being shut down just by the existence of these laws.
It really is a violation of human rights, isn't it?
Yes, yes, I think it is, yes. And Victoria supposedly has a Charter of Human Rights. They need to be looking at that again and thinking about whether or not they're actually upholding it.
Exactly. And look, there's already laws. You don't need new police powers here.
That's right, absolutely. So we've seen the police already putting in massive designated zones every time anybody even whispers about possibly having a rally. So once they've got those in place, they can do these things anyway. And nothing is sort of stopping them. They know perfectly well that they can do whatever they want. And for the most part, people don't have the power or the ability to really push back or to get accountability if they have used their powers in the wrong way. So we need to be having a much broader conversation, which is great to hear on this show, about how we get policing to be something that is not so out of control and unaccountable and so scary to so many people.
Exactly. I mean, we need to think about activists in general, and we need to think about the fact that this appears to be a divide and conquer thing, isn't it? It seems to me that the Allen government wants to Americanise Victoria.
Well, we certainly have seen the militarisation of the police increasing dramatically ever since COVID, when we saw the police going out in like quite frightening ways against the anti-COVID protest or the anti-lockdown protesters. But once that militarisation starts, it just becomes normalised and it gets worse and worse and it increases until now we're seeing, you know, protesters being shot at with grenades, like bang grenades, and the thing that shot out bits of metal at people and cut up their legs at a protest recently. So really scary stuff going on. And again, it's going to be making everybody think twice before they come out to a protest, even if they've got really legitimate things that they need to be on the street saying.
Absolutely. Instead of doing these powers, start doing a federal investigation into making a hate crime for those Nazis that attacked Camp Sovereignty.
Exactly right. And look, I think the thing we saw in New South Wales recently where the police just gave the Nazis permission to go and do their protest just shows us again that the police already have so many powers to stop groups like the Nazis, and they don't need to be using their powers against the people who are opposing the Nazis, and there is something that's really out of whack in terms of the way that policing is working in this state at the moment.
Absolutely. Kath, thank you so much for coming onto the program. It's been great
to have you. Thank you for having me.
And, you know, I'd like to have you on regularly as a regular guest just to have a look at all that.
Oh, I would love to do that. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
They're eyeing off an estate which is in perfectly good condition. It just happens to have bay views and a lot of open space.
Bay Views for All is a new documentary that reveals the human cost of the Victorian government's public housing redevelopment project. The film documents residents of the Barrack Beacon public housing estate as they fight to save their homes and community. Bay Views for All is available for community members, public housing advocates, and organisations to screen, intending to spark conversations, raise funds, and educate audiences on the importance of public housing. To organise a screening, email barrackbeacon@gmail.com. That's BARACKBEACON @gmail.com.
Save public housing! Stop the demolition!
A 3CR supporter.
And this is Marissa, back with you. You're listening to 3CR Doing Time Show. You just heard an interview with Kath Strong from the Defend Dissent Coalition, speaking about anti-protest laws that the Allen government wants to push through. Aboriginal Victorians are 15 times more likely to be searched, 13 times more likely to be tasered, Aboriginal and African communities targeted for unlawful searches and brutality. Melbourne new data released today by the Racial Profiling Data Monitoring Project, a project of the Centre Against Racial Profiling, exposes a damning pattern of systemic racism within Victoria Police. The report reveals that officers are not only searching racialised communities on significantly weaker grounds than white people they perceive as white, but are also using excessive force against racialised people at alarming rates. I'd like to welcome Dr. Tamar Hopkins to the show to talk about the findings, and she is from the Centre of Racial Profiling. Hello, Tamar, welcome.
Hi, Marissa. Thanks very much for having me on.
Lovely to have you. Been on the show for many years, although you've had a little break, isn't it?
Yes. Yep.
Tamar, can you talk about, look, it's a great report, and it's very much needed, isn't it? Can you talk about these findings? And I believe they're based on an analysis of Victoria Police's 2024 own data.
That's right. So this is Victoria Police's data that we have FOI'd from them. It's the most recent FOI of a series that we've now been undertaking for years. Our first FOI was back in 2018. And now, with the latest round of data shows that racial profiling is definitely still occurring by Victoria Police. What's different about today's data is that not only are we able to provide the public with data about Victoria Police's over-searching of First Nations and other racialised communities, but also its use of force against those communities. And what we see is that the over-searching is exactly replicated in the overuse of force. So those patterns are directly, are transferring directly on into the excessive use of force. So this really indicates that these are linked phenomenon. And in fact, when we look at who it is that is engaging in this kind of activity, it's the uniform branches of Victoria Police. So they conduct the overwhelming number of searches against individuals and are engaged in the overwhelmingly largest amount of use of force. So what we see is that those police decisions about who to stop and search on the street are directly leading to a cascade of harms to the community, including use of force, and then the over-criminalisations of those communities. So it's really critical data that makes this link for the first time between searching and use of force. We can see these patterns really clearly.
I mean, this is actually is very interesting because despite Victoria's focus on policing of First Nations people, since the police commissioner apologised at the Europe truth-telling hearings in 2023, all the data points are showing things are going in the reverse direction.
Yeah, absolutely. It's incredibly disturbing, isn't it? It shows what this is showing is that what the police command are saying to the public and to the Yurok Commission about their regrets and apologies about what they're doing is not translating in any way to their operational policing practices. So we are seeing it in name only, the ban on racial profiling, the apology to First Nations community, and not wasn't just an apology, it was a promise to stop systemic racism. Like, that's what his promise was to the community in 2023. And this shows that systemic racism is absolutely alive and well in Victoria Police and needs to be urgently addressed, but is not being addressed in any way. You know, it's quite clear that these promises to take action are not linked to any operational monitoring of the police, any changes in policing, and in fact, as you just pointed out, the data shows things are getting worse. So it's shocking. It's a shocking story to have to tell the community about what's going on.
It's attracted quite a lot of media attention. I think there's something in The Age and also NITV, Indigenous Times.
Yep, that's right.
It's a good thing.
It's an excellent thing that The Age has picked it up. And I guess, you know, looking back on last year's release of data, which was also painting a similar picture, we didn't have the use of force data at that point, but we do now. And the fact that a lot of the leading mainstream media didn't pick up that story at that point. The Age didn't cover it. The ABC barely covered it, and The Guardian didn't cover it. And so it's kind of a bit disturbing that these kind of leading institutions weren't actually focused on this data. So this time round, having The Age come in and do that report is really important for kind of lending legitimacy to the data and to the issue. And hopefully it's really coming on the tables of politicians right now and kind of being a real wake-up call. Hang on, you can't just keep giving police extra powers while you've got no checks and balances at all on the way they use those powers and the discriminatory impact on racialised Victorians. So it's really shocking, and it deserves front-page attention, and it's something that we can't continue having. This can't continue. Like, this is appalling. This cannot continue. It's like the attention has been on this for so long. Governments have not taken action. We need action. It's we're going to have more deaths in custody if something is not done to change the way policing is conducted in this state.
And just one final comment. So despite Victoria Police committing to ban racial profiling in 2015, although I'm not sure that's accurate, but I suppose, yeah they did. The findings
did.
Indicate
yep.
That's true, actually. The findings indicate that racially targeted policing practices are still firmly entrenched. However, to be fair, you know, they did settle the case, didn't they, in 2015?
Yeah, so in 2013, they settled
13,
the Hale Michael race discrimination case.
Thank you.
And they set in place a program, a 10-year program called the Equality Is Not the Same Report and Program that was intended to transform policing. So it was like, you know, there was a focus on racial profiling. They wanted to revamp the police manual. They conducted some trials of, you know, receipting, which were very poorly managed. But nevertheless, they were kind of appearing to have a focus on combating racial profiling. And then they introduced the ban 3 years later in 2015, banning racial profiling. But what this data shows is that this ban and this activity did not translate into any operational change or monitoring of what the police are in fact doing. And it's extraordinary that it takes community organisations, FOI the police, to track their own data to actually tell the story of what is really going on 10 years now after that ban was put in place. So, yeah, it's a complete indictment on the government and the police. They've just taken their eyes off the game entirely, and the data is showing that things are getting much worse.
Essentially, that's why I asked you that question, because I felt like we needed to highlight what the police had done in the past, and still things have gone backwards. I thought it would be useful to point that out.
Absolutely. It is useful. And I think it's particularly useful when thinking, you know, about with excitement about the new treaty that's in place here. And we've got, you know, the First Nations Assembly set up to combat the very issues that this data is showing. And I guess it really, I hope that people sit up and pay attention to the fact that when the police in the past have agreed to do something, it has been at the very, it hasn't filtered into their operational practices. So their intention to change what they're doing stays very much at a surface, higher level, and doesn't change what's actually going on a day-to-day basis on the streets of Victoria. So I'm hoping that these lessons that we have learnt by going through the Hale Michael settlement and getting the racial profiling ban can be learnt and can be acted upon by the People's Assembly, and perhaps we can get something different now with the treaty in place.
Okay, in conclusion, I just wanted you to briefly comment on the Allan Labor government's recent legislative announcements seeking to introduce life sentences for children. Isn't that further criminalising poverty and expanding police powers?
Yeah, it's absolutely the wrong direction. It goes against the Convention on the Rights of the Child. It goes against every piece of expert evidence that the government would have ever received, everything. So it is just extraordinary. And it doesn't bode well that they introduced that legislation on the day that the treaty was being signed. It's extremely problematic that we're seeing this kind of legislation being passed in Victoria, and at the same time an absolute lack of accountability for the bodies that are intended to arrest those young people and imprison those young people. So we don't have systems in place that we can trust to actually, you know, engage. The criminal justice system process is without accountability, and we cannot allow more children to enter the system, enter the prison system, to have to deal with police encounters without any form of accountability.
And the Racial Profiling Data Monitoring Project and the Centre Against Racial Profiling call on the Allan Labor government to redirect funding from policing and prisons to community organisations.
That's right. So there are so many ways that the government could be handling crime issues that don't involve expanding the police and criminal justice system, criminal legal system and prison system. So providing wraparound support for families and communities to actually kind of enable communities and individuals to thrive rather than to go backwards, you know, it's a no-brainer. There's so many expert reports demanding that is the approach that the government should take, and its failure to act on those very clear recommendations from the experts is just appalling, and it's such a backward step. So there's so many. We see all these great examples of community alternatives to policing, such as Aboriginal night patrols, which have been shown to be a really excellent response to keeping communities safe. We see that CoHealth's new, response to public drunkenness by having non-policing responses is just such an excellent way of handling community issues that don't have to involve the police. And it's those kinds of projects that need to be expanded to really support and protect the community, not the involvement of additional police powers and further prison sentences.
Tamar, thank you so much for coming onto the program. Can you just direct listeners to the report? where they can access that?
The data can be seen on www.racialprofilingresearch.org. So that's where all the data is. And you can sign up. We've got a petition there to petition the government to properly monitor policing and also for the independent investigation of police complaints. So we'd love people to sign up to those petitions and really kind of make a demand for something different in this state.
Thank you so much, Tamar.
No problem.
It was lovely to have you on the show.
No worries, Marissa. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Bye.
The state Labor government has begun works on demolishing Melbourne's 44 public housing towers to be replaced with private housing. Already hundreds of residents have been displaced, often into unsuitable homes under duress. The tower at 12 Holland Court, Flemington, has become a Homes Victoria work site, while the families still living in the building are being treated appallingly. Join Save Public Housing supporters in solidarity with residents. Weekdays 7 to 9am and 4:30 to 6:30pm as we engage with passing traffic to make some noise and show Jacinta Allen that the demolition of public housing is unacceptable. Signs and banners provided or bring your own. There's power in numbers, so see you out on Racecourse Road at the front of 12 Holland Court, Flemington, 7 to 9am or 4:30 to 6:30pm. Check Save Public Housing Instagram page for weekly updates. Save Public Housing is a 3CR supporter.
And in case you've just tuned in, this is the Do and Time Show, 3CR Community Radio. And you just heard an interview with Dr. Tamar Hopkins, expert on racial profiling data and founder of the Centre Against Racial Profiling. We will be playing a few announcements before the end of the show.
Telling the Albanese government how to protect nature might feel a bit like teaching them to suck eggs. But too often, governments side with big corporations over your health, your climate, and your children's future. As they rewrite Australia's nature law, they must close deforestation loopholes and protect threatened species. It's literally their job. Head to wilderness.org.au/suckeggs to demand laws that put nature and our future first. The Wilderness Society is a 3CR supporter.
Tune in to Right Relations and Innovations, 3CR's International Day of People with Disability broadcast on 3rd of December, 7am to 7pm. Hear visions of a safe future for everyone and the relationships and innovations that can get us there. For details, visit 3cr.org.au/Disability Day 2025.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30am or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
It's time for Australia's independence and sovereignty for the First People. On the 50th anniversary of the Whitlam dismissal and 171st anniversary of the Eureka Rebellion, join us for an evening of speakers, discussion, barbecue and culture, building a movement for genuine Australian independence, sovereignty and self-determination for First People and justice for working people.
Saturday, the 29th of November, 6 p.m. at the Maritime Union of Australia Auditorium, 46 to 54 Island Street, West Melbourne. End the US-Australia alliance and scrap the remnants of British colonialism. Speakers include Gary Foley, Sarah Barini, David Ball, MUA, Kevin Bracken, Shirley Winton, and others. Saturday, the 29th of November, 6 p.m. at the Maritime Union of Australia Auditorium, West Melbourne. The Spirit of Eureka is a 3CR supporter.
In the UK, racists are torching buildings that house refugees. In the US, ICE-style militias disappear people from their homes and schools. The far right here looks at that and wants an Australian version of it. They're organising openly on the streets of Melbourne and are trying to grow, and that's why we have to organise too. Join the campaign against racism and fascism on Sunday, the 30th of November, meeting at the State Library at 11:30 a.m. to stand with migrants and push back far-right politics. Because the far-right can be stopped, but only when ordinary people refuse to let them grow. Visit calf.melbourne to learn more about the campaign and to get involved.
A 3CR supporter.
Help us stay radical. Become a regular donor to 3CR. A regular donor is someone who loves 3CR so much that they set up an automatic donation to 3CR on the same day every month. 3CR is determined to stay independent. This means we don't rely on corporate sponsorship or government funding. We serve our community, not corporate interests. But this also means we do rely on people like you to keep the station running. From paying the bills to maintaining our studios to training the next generation of community broadcasters, 3CR relies on community donations to survive. By becoming a regular donor, you can help us stay resilient and radical. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au.
And it's the Do and Time Show, 3CR Community Radio, and it's approximately 4:52, and we're nearing the end of our show. Thank you to all our guests today that came on to the show. Wanted to thank Dr. Vicky Sentis for coming on and talking about the class action, landmark class action case in regards to strip searches of teenagers, or indeed young people who are being criminalised at festivals. Thank you also to Kat Strong, who came on and gave a report back of last week's rally. She's from the Dissent, Defend Dissent Coalition, and she talked a great deal about the Justice Legislation Amendment Bill and focusing on draconian anti-protest laws put forward by the Allen government, which they're proposing. And lastly, we wanted to thank also Dr. Tamar Hopkins from the Centre of Racial Profiling. And I want to, you know, who talked a lot about the police data and how, you know, Aboriginal people and people of colour are being questioned and searched a great deal. Wanted to also take this opportunity as well to give a shout out to Ilo as well, who has been interviewed on this show quite a few times, and love your work as well. And it's approximately 4:53. It's been a very action-packed show, and I'm going to be going out very soon with the theme song Blackfella, Whitefella by the Rumpy Band. Stay tuned every Monday for the Do and Time Show from 4 to 5, and take care of each other and stay strong and keep protesting. Bye.
As long as you, a true fella, as long as you
a real fella. All the people of different races with different lives in different places. It doesn't matter what your name is. We got to help. Lots of changes. We need more brothers if we're to make it. We need more sisters if we're to save it. Are you the one who's gonna stand up and be counted? Are you the one who's gonna be there when we shout it? Are you the one who's always ready with a helping hand? Are you the one who understands this family plan? Black fella, white fella, yellow fella, any fella, it doesn't matter what your color, as long as you are true fella. All the people of different races with different lives in different places, it doesn't matter which religions, it's all the same. When the ship is sinking, we need more brothers if we're to make it. We need more sisters if we're to save it. Are you the one who's gonna stand up and be counted? Are you the one who's gonna be there when we shout it? Are you the one who's always ready with a helping hand? Are you the one who understands this family plan?
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.